I go looking. You good cooking? Are you ready to come in?
86 Productions.
The Honorable Judge Clayton presiding. This is case number OUP12, The People versus Corporate Nashville. Charges include selling out, making shitty music, and sucking ass in general.
All the parties are here, I assume? Okay. I have looked over the evidence, and it is very obvious that the defendant is guilty and that they do suck ass. So does the defendant have anything to say before I make my ruling? All right, then. Judgment is in favor of the people. Corporate Nashville, you are found guilty of all charges. You have disgraced the music in which this great nation was founded upon. I hereby sentence you to death by lethal injection, and I suggest that you start listening to It Burns When I Pee. Maybe then God will save your soul.
All rise. The Honorable Judge Clayton has ruled.
Welcome, all my hillbilly friends out there. I am your host, Blake Clayton, and you're listening to episode 14 of It Burns When I Pee. If this is your first time joining us, welcome, and we're glad to have you. Sit back and enjoy, and make sure the women and children are in bed. And if you're one of our faithful followers, thank you guys again for all your support, and we hope you enjoy the show. Today, we have an interview, in the studio interview, that is, with Dave Sisson from the Gin Palace Gestures and from Three Blue Teardrops. Dave was nice enough to truck it on down from Chicago and coming in here to Get Your Hank On Studios, and it was a blast having him. He's a great guy, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. We also have coming up another skit from Billy's Lessons. This is the second lesson, and that skit was provided by One More Name from the Bootleg Asylum Radio Show. Definitely check out the Bootleg Asylum Radio Show every Tuesday. The podcast is posted at section86.com. He has a great show, and we'll talk more about him later as well. We got voicemails, we got ads, let's see what else, we got tons of music, obviously. We got music from the Steel Drivers, we've got music from the Gin Palace Jesters and Three Blue Teardrops. We've also got a song from the Devil's Own, and we're going to squeeze a couple more of them in, Misery Jackals, and our good friend Carmen Lee sent us a new song, so we're going to check out all that music. We got an awesome interview, we got tons of stuff going on, and we're really excited about this show. We want to tell everybody some more news, and we'll get to that later on. But the main news we want to tell you is that we have a new sponsor, and that sponsor is Metal Farm Magazine. Check them out at www.metalfarm.com. This is a new magazine that's coming out. I do believe Hank 3 is going to be on the cover of the first issue. They're going to talk about the reinstatement of Hank Williams Sr. into the Grand Ole Opry. There's going to be tons of hot chicks in it, hot rods, custom bikes. You name it, they've got it, and we've hooked up with them, and we think we got a good partnership going on. We'll have an ad for them later on in the show. So without giving up any more information, we'll go ahead and start off with the first song. It's called Midnight Train to Memphis, and it's by the Steel Drivers, and you can check them out at steeldrivers.net. This song is awesome. I love it. The whole album is great. It's their debut album, and definitely check them out. It's an awesome bluegrass CD. There's not one song on it that I didn't like, and I thank those guys for shipping it out to me. So here we are with the Steel Drivers and their song, Midnight Train to Memphis. See you on the flip side, folks.
This is Mike Fleming from the Steel Drivers, and you are listening to It Burns When I Pee.
Yeah!
The only podcast around that plays real, by God, country music. Thank you.
nah, baby. Said walk right, you'll soon be home. Cross the line and you're on your own. For today's shotguns and barbed wire fences. For tonight's a set and listen. When you can midnight train and level. On the ground, work like hell till the sun goes down. For today's a shotgun. Get my grudge. When I get to 39, that's the longest day in a prisoner's mind. For today's shotguns and barbed fences. For tonight's to sit and listen until the midnight train to Memphis.
Every week, the Outlaw Punk growls the best in hip-hop, folk punk, slam grass, outlaw, honky-tonk, guitar, busting, word-slinging, twang-tastic alternative tunes. Bubba will also have rodeo news from our favorite toughest cowboys and contests, cool stuff like wallpapers, icons, and ringtones for your mobile phone. Gift certificates, iTunes, and swag from our favorite band. For some guaranteed sizzle in your ears, burn up some digital petrol and head over to outlawpunk.com and subscribe to Outlaw Punk Cowboy Show.
Shit.
Heart and
honky tonk, but don't get long.
Damn it.
What?
No. Any man of mine better walk.
Damn it.
Hey, Billy. What are you doing, son?
Oh, hi, Dad. I left my CDs at Cheyenne's house, so I've been trying to find something good to listen to on the radio.
Really? I can help you out with that, son.
Hey, you just smashed my radio.
You're damn right, boy. Look, if you don't have any real country CDs, then you won't find anything to listen to on a fucking radio station.
Christ, Dad. Last time you shot my radio, and now you smashed this one. What am I supposed to listen to now?
Well, like I told you before, son, it's an easy fix. Here, check this out again. Just go to itburnswhenip.com. That's www.ibwip.com. And it will take you to section86.com, where you'll find a lot of real music and interviews. In the past podcast, Blake has featured and had great reviews with such great artists as Joey Alcorn, Scott H. Byram, Lonesome Wyatt, Wayne Hancock, Jake Penrod, Joe Buck, and others.
No shit. Wow, that's fucking great stuff, Dad. I should have listened to you better the last time you saved me and the maid Nancy from all that burning pain with my pee.
Well, son, sometimes it just takes you a little longer for things to sink in. Hey, speaking of things sinking in, have you seen the maid Nancy? It's time for your mom and me to get our cat bath. I mean, or so to speak. Anyway, Billy, hope you've learned another lesson about regular radio stations.
Yeah, they suck and could be fatal. Thanks, Dad. I'm downloading all the episodes of It Burns When I Pee right now so I can put them on my iPod.
That's my boy. Now I'm off to find a maid so your mom and I can get our hank on and keep downloading those podcasts, son.
Who must pay? And I live wild.
As always, we got to thank one more name from the Bootleg Asylum Radio Show. On Friday nights, you can hear him at flapdaddy.com, or on Tuesdays, you can download his show on section86.com. Wanted to take a couple minutes to talk about the reinstatement of Hank Williams into the Grand Ole Opry. As many of you know, Hank was kicked off the Grand Ole Opry in August of 1952 and died soon thereafter and was never reinstated. And the Grand Ole Opry has always used his likeness and talked about him. And I don't think a lot of people know that he is no longer a member of the Grand Ole Opry. So the fine folks at reinstatehank.org, along with Hank Williams III, Blake Judd Films, and tons of people are really putting a lot of effort into this campaign to get him reinstated. So you want to go over and check them out, sign the petition. They also have t-shirts for sale, bumper stickers, buttons, posters. They got a lot of great artwork on those. So definitely go and check out the reinstatehank.org and their campaign. We support them fully. And here's a voicemail right now from our cousin Wildweed. And if you'll all take a moment in silence and sit back and listen to Cousin Wildweed, we'll be right back.
This is for all my friends there in the Section 86 Asylum. This is your cousin Wildweed calling, and I just wanted to know that I was very touched and moved by your bulletin this morning. You posted about the Reinstate Hank movement. Just wanted to call right now to see if you would all take a moment to bend your knee, get down on your knees and pray with me to the Lord, our God, to hear our prayers on this. So I want you all to join with me right now as we say a prayer to the great Almighty. Dear God, we, your humble servants of your divine will, come together from all points around the world that you made, Lord. We pray that you will hear our prayers and strike down with swift and mighty retribution the vile and evil cretins in Nashville that would keep your son, Hank Williams Sr., from his rightful place in the official roles of the Grand Ole Opry, Lord, without whom him no one would even care about the Grand Ole Opry. Smite them down, O Lord, and have mongrel hellhounds feast upon their quivering entrails. Let those that would keep Hank Williams Sr. from being rightfully reinstated into the Grand Ole Opry, from which he should have never been shunned, let them burn in shame and pain for all eternity in the hell fires of purgatory, O God. Hear our prayers, O Lord, and smite down these vile and wicked heathens that would dishonor and disrespect the chosen child of yours who has become a worldwide icon for all that country music stands for and ever will or should stand for. Hank Williams Sr., O Lord, in the blessed name of your Son we pray, in the spirit of the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, let it be, O Lord, let it be. And they all said, Amen. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Reverend Cousin Wildweed. Anyway, I want to tell everybody about our It Burns an IP promo video. We've had it out for about 3 or 4 weeks now. We got it out right after the last episode, but didn't get a chance to tell everybody. If you want to check out our new promo video, you can go to our MySpace page and check it out. My friend Joe Aaron hooked us up and did an amazing job on our video. I sent him a little audio, and I said, hey, this is kind of what I want, and he took it from there, and it's a pretty awesome video, and we want to thank him again. You can go to our MySpace page, and you can click on the link to his MySpace page. He's a great filmmaker, and if you're a band out there or an artist who wants to get a video out there or something, he can definitely help you out. So check him out. Let's crack open the old mailbox and check out some feedback that we've gotten since last show. This one was submitted by Durgus, and it says, great music, fun show. This show has the best collection of independent outlaw country folk music. I've heard about many artists whom I grew to be a big fan of. So thank you very much for that. Another one is Rockin' Show. I love When It Burns When I Pee. And the podcast is great, too. And that's from my boy, Red Boy. You can check out redboypodcast.com. It's good old Red Boy and his lovely wife, Absolute Amy. And they're from Bloomington, Illinois. And they have a great show, so you want to check those guys out. Another one is from twangnation.com. It says, just when your eyes have started to gaze over with all the talk about Elliot Spitzer being the biggest dumbass on the planet, or if Hillary and Obama ought to just put it into a steel cage death match for democracy, It Burns When I Pee has released episode 13, the Titties and Country Music release. Blake had the good sense to take my advice and got Doyle Mayfield from the Doyle and Debbie Show on to tell us the tales about his childhood and life performing with his third Debbie. So thanks again for shipping us that. Here's another one from Jim and Jesse and the Virginia Boys. Now, this is an interesting one. This is from, you know, on MySpace, a lot of times I put out mass releases and info. And I did it to Jim and Jesse and the Virginia Boys, and this is what I got back in return. Is this a joke, or do you purposely try to offend? Hi, Blake. I never heard of underground country before. That's a new one for me. I sort of think that if it's good music, you don't need to use the shock factor. But hey, we wish you luck. God bless, Mrs. Jesse McRandles. And thank you, Mrs. McRandles. And like I said, we hope we didn't offend you. But most of the people like my offensive, disgusting, perverted thoughts. And so we're going to keep going with those. Got another one from Hillbilly Pawpaw. And I love that guy. I just finished another podcast. I look forward to your show like no other podcast. I really love the better sound quality as well. I spread the word to others who love this music. Please keep them coming, and I will leave a voicemail soon. Thanks, Blake. Got another one here from Mike. It burns when I pee for life. Seriously, IBWIP4LF is my license plate. Okay, maybe not, but it will be someday. Your show is the shit with a monster, Blake. Let me know when you want my talents on your show for a skit or something. Maybe Shannon Sharp can make guest appearance. Think about it. And that was Mike. You can hear him on Vertebreaker, the other show on section86.com. And one more. It hurts so good. This podcast makes Big and Rich cry in their pink martinis. Love the feedback, guys. Keep them coming. You can send us an email or a message on our MySpace. Love it. Thanks a lot, guys. I want to talk again about spfanzine.com. That's spfanzine.com. They have a special It Burns When I Pee page on there. They got tons of information about different artists. They're based overseas, and Malcolm does a great job. And I want to give Malcolm a special shout out and thank you again for all the work that you've done to help support It Burns When I Pee. He's designed a pretty cool page over there, so definitely check him out. Again, that's spfanzine.com. And tell him we sent you. Now it's time to get down to the nitty-gritty and what you've all been waiting for, and that is the interview with Dave Sisson from the Gin Palace Jesters and from Three Blue Teardrops. Again, it was awesome. Dave came down on a Saturday. I fed him a couple Guinnesses. He sat down, and he was patient with us, and he was really awesome. We talked for about an hour and a half before we did the interview, and then we had the interview, and we talked for another hour and a half afterwards. Our good buddy Andy from Section86.com accidentally forgot his power cord to his laptop, so the interview didn't even come close to all the stuff we talked about. We talked about everything from rugby to producing albums and what all goes into making albums. It was really awesome having Dave here, and I'm not trying to be a suck up or anything, but you know, for a guy to come down and take a 4-hour drive to hang out with a couple dorky podcasters, it means a lot to us, and we thank him again. So we'll take a quick break. Talk about 9bullets.net, and we'll be back with Pomade on My Pillow by the Gin Palace Jesters, and then the Dave Sisson interview, part one.
Hee-haw. Go on, you dang varmints. Oh, hello. My name is Sheriff Longshaft. I was just in the middle of cleaning up a little town trash. While I'm finishing up, and why don't you head on over to 9bullets.net. They have tons of great reviews and blogs about all kinds of music, from Motley Crue to those poor bastards. 9bullets.net gives you all the info you need to know. All their alibis are 100 proof.
When I staggered in the door about 4 o'clock, I never expected your kissing. When I staggered in the door about 4 o'clock, I never expected you'd be missing. Well, it's true, I closed the bar last night and Frankie kicked me out. But as I made the lonesome walk on home, I never had a doubt. I never really thought that you had leaving on your mind. Our lives were never perfect, I'll admit that was true. And I never believed you were a swindler, spied a loose rumor or two. Through the years they both done things to gain the upper hand, but the things I found when I came home are beyond reprimand. Empty bottles in the kitchen, ashtrays all full, note on the table, my picture on the floor. I knew it was over when I saw that golden band, and I smelled pomade on my pillow, and it was not my brand. Stayed out all night and come home at 4 a.m. But I never broke no wedding vows like you did with him. These cloak and dagger games we played brought pain to you and me. And your two-timing me breaks my heart with jealousy. So I crawl into bed to cry my lonesome self to sleep upon the crime scene dirtied by your backstabbing me. You should have said it was over, spared me this nightmare, for the things I found when I came home have left me in despair. Empty bottles in the kitchen, ash cans all full, note on the table, broken glass on the floor. I knew it was over by the writing of your hand, and I spilled pomade on my pillow, and it was not
Welcome back, everybody. We're in the studio. Get your hink on the studio, that is. And we have with us Dave Sisson from the Jim Palace Jesters and Three Blue Teardrops. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hello.
We just got done hearing Paul Made on My Pillow. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Dave, and where you grew up?
I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Well, halfway between Pittsburgh and Washington, Pennsylvania, down in the southwest corner, sort of in the foothills of the Appalachians. And my father was a steel worker, and grandfather was a coal miner, and so my mother was coal miner's daughter. Mm-hmm. So that ties into the last song, because that was written as a kind of response to Loretta Lynn's "Don't Come Home From Drinking With Lovin' On Your Mind." And in the song, the guy says, when I staggered in the door about 4 o'clock, I never expected your kissing, but when I staggered in the door at about 4 o'clock, I never expected you'd be missing. So that's sort of my ode to Loretta.
Where did you start getting into music? At what age? And
I started getting into music real early from watching UHF channel. We had the rabbit ears. You guys, like, you're old enough to remember the rabbit ear situation. And if you jiggled it just right, I could get Petticoat Junction, which was one of my favorites because of the theme song, Petticoat Junction theme song, which was Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs. And also the Beverly Hillbillies, which was also those gentlemen, which I didn't know at the time, and Batman, because of the theme song, Nelson Riddle Orchestra, and Peter Gunn, that was one of my favorite ones. I think that was Al Caiola on guitar. I don't really know who was, but that was a Henry Mancini song. So I started getting into many of my favorite TV shows were just ones with good music. And then I started listening to the radio, and back then the radio was all that 70s glam rock, which I did not care for, and I was not raised around country music at all, so I had to sort of find it myself. And around that time, in 77 or so, Charlie Daniels had a hit with The Devil Went Down to Georgia. So I wanted to, from there, I decided I was going to try to learn how to play the fiddle, and they offered it at school. So I started taking fiddle lessons, but they ended up teaching you how to play Tchaikovsky and read music. And I did that for about 4 years and realized that wasn't going to turn into square dance fiddle. So I gave that up. I tried to play guitar once, and then I kind of gave that up and really didn't do anything, but just got into punk rock in the early 80s, and I saw the Stray Cats on Fridays once back in 1981, and in 1982, my mother and her boyfriend, when parents were divorced, they took me to Knoxville, and I saw Johnny Cash on the 4th of July at the Knoxville, Tennessee Volunteer Stadium, And that's really what got me into Johnny Cash and listening to the Sun Records stuff and listening to early Elvis and Hillbilly and Carl Perkins. And from there, I got into rockabilly and I got into more Hank Williams style country and listened to traditional country and hillbilly stuff like King Records and a lot of that pre-war and then moving up into Bakersfield country and Buck Owens and stuff like that. So I've always been into rockabilly and country and doo-wop, and I just think the old music is better, most of it.
Definitely. So you mentioned some of your musical influences early on. When did you start really getting into playing the guitar and really actually writing songs as well?
I got my first guitar from the next door neighbor, who was my uncle. I lived in a place like Mayberry. It was a little coal town called Beeling, Pennsylvania. And my next door neighbor, he was a homicide detective, and he had this big Johnny Cash record collection. And after I saw Johnny Cash, I discovered these records over in my cousin's basement, and I said, I gotta borrow these, and he let me borrow them. And then years later, I discovered he had three guitars, and he ended up selling me this Red Harmony Rocket Chuck Berry style guitar for like $50. So he basically gave it away as a gift. What I wasn't even really aware of it at the time. But from there, I got into learning how to play the guitar and learn how to play simple blues progressions like Jimmy Reed. And from there, I just wanted to, I just wanted to be like Carl Perkins. So I was trying to play lead guitar because I didn't know anybody else who played, and I just started writing my own songs because I thought that's what you're supposed to do.
Now, the name of the band, the Gin Palace Jesters, is a very original name. How did you and the rest of the band devise this name?
I wrote a song about my wife has a friend who is kind of a man-eater. You know, she chews through a lot of men, and I wrote this song called Johnny Come Lately about her. It was sort of a warning to young men to stay away from this woman.
It plays as she walked down the street, you know.
Yes, because at the end of the song, it says she'll take you and all of your things. And in the song, I say, I came up with some lines, something about be careful, you dime store stallions, all you gin palace jesters and kings. And I kind of like that gin palace jesters thing because gin palace is just a classic name for a divey honky-tonk, and the jesters thing, just goofball. So we took it as a name because it's kind of regal, but it's self-deprecating too, because that's kind of what we do. We get up in our little hillbilly outfits and we go into these dive bars and we entertain people sometimes for less than grocery wages and just try to have fun with it and not really take ourselves too seriously, you know. So I just think it's kind of a classy way to say that we're a bunch of jokers. And then the album Honky Tonk Fools, that was written sort of as a theme song to that name, because it's sort of it means the same thing, really.
Sure. When I listen to your debut album, Honky Tonk Fools, as you just stated, and then the new album, I find that the tones of the two records are very different, and the second record seems to be more serious, more focused. Can you describe the band's goals while recording the second album, and were you striving to do a more mature album in terms of lyrics?
I don't think I was really striving to do anything. We're always just striving to put out the best record we can. I think maybe we made a slight effort to make it a little more country than the first one, which is a little more hillbilly, maybe a little more rockabilly. But I think the second one, plus a lot of things happened, you know, sometimes you just have to kind of use your players, and I have better country players on the second record and a fiddle player who could play real slow ballads, and some different things happened. I mean, the songs that were written for an album were usually written several years leading up to the album. So I think many of the songs that came on the second record, there was maybe, you know, another 4 years of living that had gone on between recording the first one and recording the second one. So there's a lot of crazy things happened in my life. So, you know, whether it be marital problems or people dying, and a lot of serious things maybe got addressed that weren't addressed in the first one, you know.
Now, sometime before the release of the new album, the band added a new fiddle player, as you were talking about. And while listening to the new album, it's become obvious to me that she adds a great deal more to the band than just the fiddle playing. Can you describe the kind of effect that she's had on the band and in the music?
She adds sex appeal, which we never had before. we finally have some of that. But seriously, I met her at a Ray Price show. We went to see Ray Price play in Chicago at the Old Town School of Folk Music, and we got to get out Ray Price's autograph, and I'm a big Ray Price fan because he's, you know, I mean, one of the kings of traditional honky-tonk music. And we were having beers and found out she played fiddle, and so she came over and tried out, and right away, her knowledge of kind of the way we did music, which was sort of like pick a key and fake the rest. She was a sort of a classically trained Suzuki kid, so she didn't really know what to play. She wanted to be told what to play, and I said, "You listen, you got to figure it out on your own. Listen to this, listen to that." But she took to it real quick and took some lessons from some other people. But she definitely brings. I've always wanted a fiddle in the band, but we didn't have a fiddle player before. And every song that we've ever written probably could I could figure a way to put fiddle in it, you know. But I always wanted this band to be a six-piece traditional band with steel and fiddle and all that. So it's real nice to have that. And plus, she can sing, so we started throwing her some backup parts and some high harmony parts and occasional lead, and you know, and then live she'll sing a lead every once in a while. So she's definitely got talent. She's got a lot of things you can't teach somebody, like timing, pitch, you know, and things like that. That's just something you're born with.
So it just broadens, having her in the band kind of broadens what you guys can do, what you're capable of doing.
Sure, and as a songwriter, you know, you want to have as many different sounds as you can to get your songs across, you know, however, whatever they are.
And speaking of fiddles, I guess, you cover the Buck Owens song Second Fiddle on the new album, and the band's sound reminds me tremendously of the late 50s and early 60s honky-tonk sound that Buck Owens had, and you talked earlier about the Bakersfield sound. Was that intentional to have that feel for this album, the new album?
I think the only thing we've ever tried to do with the band is to try to make it sound like traditional country and hillbilly. I mean, some people maybe want to call us a retro band, and I don't really like that term because we're writing original music most of the time. So it is new country. It's brand new. All the songs, we made them up. But the sounds that we're looking for are, because we like a lot of those older country sounds, we're trying to get our guitars to sound like that. And instead of having an electric sounding fiddle, we want it to sound natural and woody, like bluegrass would be. And we're just trying to get the tones of that traditional sound and work them into brand new songs. Because a lot of the stuff that comes out of Nashville is totally processed and they crushed everything and it sounds really electric and... You know, it's not really, it loses the vibe somewhere. You forget that they're people and it sounds a little more machine-like, you know?
Yeah, I think, like you said, the earlier stuff that told a story, it had feeling in it, and I think now it's so processed that you lose a tremendous amount of the meaning of the song.
You lose a lot of the people that are involved with it, it seems like, you know, because if you're constantly redoing take after take to get perfect performances from everybody, you forget that there's people involved in it, and a lot of the emotion gets lost. I think if you go back to listen to some of the recordings from the 1920s and 30s, like the peer recordings, I mean, they're totally emotional, but there's tons of bad notes and bad music going on. I mean, but somehow the people shine through, the spirits of the people, you can get them in the recordings, you know, and that's something that I don't want to succumb to. I want to make a perfect record too, but I don't want to succumb to making everything so perfect that we take the people out of the equation and the spirit and emotion of it.
And I think you can tell the difference between, you know, a perfect record that is done in the right way and then what you would call a perfect record that is completely processed and computer generated. And another one of the songs on the new album is Down Beneath the Willow, and it's unlike any other songs that the band has ever recorded, in my opinion. It's really eerie, and it's much like Hank Williams' Alone and Forsaken, which is probably my all-time favorite Hank Williams song. What was the inspiration behind that song?
I went to Savannah, Georgia, touring around with my trio years and years ago, and I was overcome by the beauty of the city. And I don't know if you've ever seen Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. There's sort of like some sort of voodoo, which I think I'm getting the name of the movie right, but there's different cemeteries down there, and the whole place is really spooky with the willow trees. And I wrote this song, and I had all the verses, but I didn't really have a chorus, and I was carrying this song around with me for like 15 years, and then... Wow. Eventually, I was stumped, so I took it to my buddy Paul, who's a songwriter who, anybody's from Carbondale, maybe they remember the Bottle Tones. He's the lead singer in the Bottle Tones, and he's a good lyricist, so he took it and he wrote me a chorus for it. So then, finally, the song was done, finally, I thought. So we ended up recording it. We didn't use drums specifically to be like Hank Sr., no drums, and we did go out of our way to try to make some of the instruments sound like his band, but it was... And it's a minor key song. It's about a man who is completely grief stricken because his wife is dead, and he goes and visits her grave and gets drunk every night and is waiting to die. So I mean, it's perfect country topic, you know. And we just try to make it sparse, and definitely went for like that rambling man kind of a.
Sure. And it had the feel. I mean, you, like I said, you told a story, and the listener can not only follow the story but could enjoy the sound. But really, I mean, you get the feelings that that person has. And
right, and then well, Katie, the fiddle player, she sings a backup on the song that's kind of supposed to be. I don't know if it worked or not, but it's supposed to be kind of reminiscent as if the guy is singing. And the woman is singing from beyond the grave. She's the buried in reverb, and it kind of comes forward. And it's like the man and the woman are singing together. They're still connected, even though one of them's dead and one of them's alive. You know, that was what we were shooting for. I don't know whether it worked, but
see, that's the difference. That kind of song compared to the Donkey Donk, but Donkey Donk. I mean, there's complete difference, and I think that's why your music stands out.
Thank you.
What are the goals for the band? The Jim Polish Jesters the next few years, and where do you see yourself going?
I don't know where I see us going. It's kind of weird. You know, like I know a lot of bluegrass players who were struggling to make ends meet before Oh Brother Where Art Thou came out. You know, these guys were playing the festival circuit in the summer and starving in the winter and working their jobs as plumbers and carpenters and whatever. And when something like that came out, a lot of these players, they had gigs full year round, you know, so something like that would have to happen for us to be able to afford to really just quit all our jobs. We have kids and wives and houses and mortgages and car payments, and we need to be insured. So traditional country is not something that people really are into anymore. I mean, the market is a lot smaller for that. People want the kind of that rock, 70s rock stuff that's coming out of Nashville now, and that's where the money is, and I don't want to play that. And because I'm trying to we're as a group trying to stick to our guns with what we like, we're definitely paying for it in the wallet. So gigs are sometimes hard to get, and whenever you tell people you want X number of dollars because you have six bellies to feed, they don't want to pay it. So a lot of times we aren't working, you know. I mean, we're just doing other things or playing in side bands and just trying to keep going. But it'd be nice to have a couple records and be able to support ourselves just musically. I think that's really a modest goal that we want to shoot for.
And that it is difficult now, like you said, if you don't have the backing of a major label and all the advertising money and all the money they give to the radio stations to play your songs. I mean, you're dependent on what you do. I mean, right. Like you said, you do all your guys' own promotion, websites. You have to do everything yourself. And not only is it time-consuming, but, you know, if you don't have the backing, it's very difficult. Do you think that's what kind of keeps the genre down, I guess, is in a way?
I'm not sure. I can't really answer that. I just know what I like musically, and I think there's a lot of artists who were famous, you know, and getting lots of airplay in the 50s or 60s who could not get airplay in the 90s in the 2000s, you know. I mean, Buck Owens recently passed away. We talked about him. Johnny Cash wasn't getting airplay. You know, these are legends. They're still who are still writing good music, and there's still some out there like Ray Price. He doesn't really get much airplay. He does on satellite if you go to the right channel, you know. But it's everything, right? Everything is kind of compartmentalized, and we've taken everything and broken them down into these so many sub genres. Like you won't ever see an electric country band and a bluegrass band on the same bill, because bluegrass people just want to go see bluegrass. That's all they want. Rockabilly people want to go see rockabilly. Country people want to see country. New country people want to see new country. Traditional country people want to go see that. People who like rock want to go see rock. And you've got everything in these little niches, you know. And so that's kind of one thing that's, I don't know, it's not necessarily closed-minded, but it's if you have a specific like, it's a lot easier to find it. So people are coming to your podcast to hear what they, because they like what you like, and which is why I'm here. But you know, I don't really know. I don't have the answer to that.
Okay. Unlike many underground quote unquote country artists and bands nowadays, the Jesters haven't really they've refrained from jumping on the, you know, fuck Nashville bandwagon. Why have you made the decision to avoid this popular kind of slogan now? I mean, what keeps the band from going that direction?
Well, I don't really know what name calling is going to do. I don't know who that's going to help. I also think it's kind of, I don't know, I'd like to be a little more classy than that. There is a lot of crap coming out of Nashville that I don't like, but there's a lot of crap that came out of Nashville that I did did like, and then some every once in a while something will come through that I do like. And, you know, I, for one, wouldn't mind going to play on the Grand Ole Opry and saying I did that. So if I'm going to run around and yell, you know, F Nashville, do you think they're going to want to invite me down there? No. I mean, I'm not looking to suck up to anybody because I'm doing something that's kind of renegade and outlaw by putting out my own records and continuing to play music despite the fact that, you know, Nashville isn't calling me on the telephone. You know, I'm just going to keep doing it. And if they call, hey, great. If not, so what? Buck Owens stayed in California when everyone thought he was going to move to Nashville. And he did his own thing, and he made money doing that. And it was as big or more influential than all these guys in Nashville. Now they want to sound like Buck Owens, you know, but Buck Owens never sucked up to anybody.
Right. So it's one of those things where you're not going out of your way to make anybody happy there, but and you're not burning any bridges. But like you said, you don't have to like what's coming out. You know, if they come to you and say, you know, we want you to do what you're doing, then, you know, you don't have baggage on behind you.
Like, right.
Oh, you know.
I don't want to have to look like a hypocrite about it, you know. I mean, I'm a songwriter, so in many ways, if there might be some kid who is going to toe the Nashville line, who hasn't even been born yet, who's going to hear one of my songs 20 years from now, record it, make a big hit with it, and I'm going to be sitting there drinking beers, watching football, and checks are going to come in the mail, and I'm going to get them. I don't know what's going to happen. Nobody knows, you know. But I don't want to get into name calling. I just don't think there's any use. But I like Nashville. It's a good town. And the live music scene could be better. But I know a lot of musicians who are in the live music scene there who are slugging away. And you know, I'm just not going to put anybody down. I just don't like it.
Have you had much experience in the Austin
music scene? I've played Austin quite a few times.
There's always that comparison of the Nashville music scene and even, you know, in Austin. A lot of the
artists in Austin are more relevant to me right now, like James Hand and Justin Trevino and Dale Watson and Roger Wallace, those guys I know. And I know musicians that play for all those bands, and I played, you know, shows with some of those guys. And that is kind of where I buy my records from. The last record I bought that I listened to on the way down was a Justin Trevino record. And I think it's fantastic. It's traditional country, and it sounds like the old stuff. But, I mean, they're all new songs, and the playing is great, and there's, you know, I mean, I'm into it.
And is there any kind of tour information, or where can fans go? I mean, I know that you guys play, being from Chicago, you guys play the Horseshoe a lot. I've been to the Horseshoe, and I've had the deep-fried Twinkie, which, you know, I was like, oh, my God, a deep-fried Twinkie. But what else do you guys have going on, and where can people go to find out about it?
We don't really have anything big lined up. We have a bunch of... Like I say, a bunch of us are saddled with children, so we've got that responsibility. Our fiddle player Katie just recently had a baby, so we're kind of just laying low right now. But we're letting the music do the walking, and every once in a while we get a bug up our ass and we jump in a van and go somewhere. So you kind of just sort of have to keep your eyes open. We have a website, www.ginpalacejesters.com, and we also have a MySpace page. So we try to list the dates whenever someone remembers to. It sounds terribly unprofessional, but when you're a do-it-yourself operation, it's sometimes hard to keep everything
right, because you got your work schedule, then you got your grocery list, you got to go get, and all your responsibilities. And yeah, I mean, the band is completely important, but like you said, you have 100 million things, you're going to miss two or three things.
So. Right, we don't have any people helping us out, you know. Yeah. So
well, we'll be right back. We're going to smoke a cigarette because Cheyenne does not allow us to smoke in the studio, and we'll be back and we'll talk a little bit about the Three Blue Teardrops. Does that sound good?
Sounds great.
All right.
Fellas, are you losing your hair? Has your six-pack turned into a keg? Ladies, is that waist getting a little too snug for those designer jeans? Has gravity taken its toll on those once fine boobies? Well, folks, have we got the cure for you. For a limited time only, It Burns When IP is offering to make you cool, awesome, and sexy once more. I know what you're thinking. How can they do that? It's simple. Just head on over to PodcastDally.com and vote for It Burns When IP. Once you've submitted your vote, watch the transformation begin. In no time, you'll be attracting the opposite sex like never before. Become a winner and vote for It Burns When IP at PodcastDally.com.
Results may vary, but you should still vote for It Burns When IP.
Hey!
All right, welcome back to It Burns When I Pee. Again, we have Dave Sisson with us. And Dave, let's talk a little bit about the other band that you're in, Three Blue Teardrops. You've been playing with them for how long?
Since 1991. We formed in Chicago when I first moved to Chicago from Pittsburgh. And I wanted to do something that was a little bit like kind of Sun Records, rockabilly stuff. But because me and the bass player and the drummer, we all listened to a good deal of punk rock and hardcore throughout the 70s and 80s, early English punk and American hardcore, we kind of had this a little bit of more of an edge to it. And this was in a time where, before the Reverend Horton Heat was touring around and getting real popular, we met, and we didn't really think anybody in America was doing this, but we knew some people in Europe were playing something called psychobilly, but we really didn't know what it was because it was before the internet and all that other good stuff. So we started playing something that was like our version of psychobilly from the song Johnny Cash, One Piece at a Time, Psychobilly Cadillac, you know. So we were playing psychobilly or American rockabilly or whatever, just kind of rough rocking stuff. And that band went pretty good and hard until about 1998 or so, and we sort of petered out, because there was a swing revival going on and people were really into swing bands, and so we were missing out on gigs, and we all started buying houses and having kids and moving here and hither and yon and whatever. So we never really broke up, but then in the last couple of years we started getting back together and putting out music again. So now I'm in two bands.
How is it writing songs for both bands? I mean, do you have to kind of put yourself in a different place since the difference in styles?
Kind of, sometimes. I mean, the trio, Three Blue Teardrops, a little more rocking, so I can play more rock and pop songs, you know, but still roots. And it seems like a lot of people who hear that music, they want it to be some sort of song about a car or a girl or whatever, you know. It's a little more good time Saturday night music, whereas the country band is a little more storytelling and it's more somber. There's a lot less. I have to do a lot less because I in the Teardrops, Three Blue Teardrops, I play constantly because there's three guys, so we're all making a racket. But in the country band, I do a tasty little lick and then I stop, and then it's the fiddle player's turn, then it's the steel player's turn, and then eventually it'll come back to me and I get a little tasty lick in there. So it's a little more busy, you know, but it's fun. It certainly appeals to my guitar player side.
Now, and there's a large community of people that are into the throwback hot rods, kind of like the pinup girls and rockabilly music. Are you surprised by the music of the 50s and 60s? So many young people today are listening to it. I mean, do you think it helps that the bands put a little more of a hip spin on it to kind of keep them in it?
Well, I think it's about the evolution of music. If you know anything about music, you really know there's only 12 notes. There's only 12 notes to choose from. So everything everyone's doing, it seems like when you run out of ideas, you kind of have to go back and mine some other ideas and put them together with something that happened along the way. So now you're getting, you know, in a band like Three Blue Teardrops, we're taking 50s music, putting a little 70s punk in there, injecting a little dirt blues in there and a little 80s hardcore, and then you have something new. It's kind of different, you know what I mean? It's you can hear the influences, but we're not resting on our influences. We're not trying to be super traditional about it. We're just trying to make something new, you know.
Right. So I think that's interesting. You take the base of it and you kind of put layers of different influences that you have in how the Teardrops kind of
sort of pretend, like a lot of bands maybe who are playing rockabilly pretend like the 60s, the 70s, 80s, and 90s nothing's ever happened. We're still stuck in 1957. We didn't want to do that. We wanted to try to take a little bit from everything. So we do some songs that are surfy and some westerny songs and, you know, some rhythm and blues songs and some hardcore type, you know, stuff with an upright, still with an upright, but that was the plan.
And do you have any plans with touring with those guys?
I try to keep both bands active. This band is, we're supposed to go out to the West Coast. There's a big market for this music out on the West Coast, and it seems to be really popular right now. So we're going out to LA, and we're gonna do 2 weeks out there, coming at the end of April here and in the early May.
Awesome. And where can folks find information about the Teardrop?
They can go to MySpace again. There's Three Blue Teardrops MySpace page, and there's also a website with the number 3 Blue Teardrops. The number blueteardrops.com.
All right, awesome. And Dave, I appreciate you coming down from Chicago and being the first guest on It Burns My P to be in the studio. And as you can see, the fancy digs here.
It's pretty swank.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Hank Williams stuff on the walls here,
and
people, just like you expect.
It's about the size of a trailer. So, but again, thank you
very
much.
A double wide.
There you go. fancy double white trailer. But thanks again for being on the show. Like I said, I love your music. I think your songwriting is amazing. And as I always say, keep doing what you're doing, because there are fans out there that appreciate it and that love it and that need your bands like you around.
Well, I appreciate you for having me. Thanks.
All right.
And at first I wasn't sure. I rubbed my eyes and shook my head and looked at it some more. Well, man, am I telling you what I saw changed my life. It was old Webb's bullhorn Pontiac streaking through the night. Old Webb's bullhorn Pontiac, gold Winchester's on the back, pearl-handled six-shooters on the door, silver dollar interior, stranger than a UFO in East Tennessee. It's old Webb's bullhorn Pontiac burning up the street. Old Webb was like a white hot comet riding in that car, the ostentatious king of all the honky tonks and bars. With his custom boots and nudie suits, a man seemed quite bizarre. Nasal wine, jet black hair, and pool shaped like guitars. Oh, how I long to know the folks and places he's seen, with those big Texas longhorns slicing through the wind. Some say they don't like him, but they don't understand. Tone a bullhorn, Bonneville takes a certain kind of man. Old Webb's bullhorn Pontiac, Chester's on the back, pearl-handled six-shooters on the door, silver dollar interior, stranger than a UFO in East Tennessee. It's old Webb's bullhorn Pontiac burning up the street. Me a guitar and start writing the songs that'll set the world on fire, and the record executives are gonna pay me a thanks, and when my payday comes I want a bullhorn Pontiac. Oh, it's bullhorn Pontiac, gold Winchester's on the back, pearl-handled six-shooters on the door, silver dollar interior. Oh man, such a sight you never did see. Just a walk on the dog and feeling carefree. Just a walk on the dog and feeling carefree. Just a walk on the dog.
Hey Blake, Randy from MetalFarm.com. Just calling to tell you that we here at MetalFarm.com love the show. Appreciate what you're doing at I Burns When It Pee, bringing real country music to the people. We hope to rock out with you guys for a long time. Maybe when it's all said and done, we'll get Carrie Underwood off the radio. Maybe we can make her a porn star where she should be. Drink that in, Blake. See ya.
Hey, I told y'all to get off my farm.
Thank you.
There is a new magazine hot off the press, Metal Farm Magazine. They have all your hillbilly music, art, and style needs. From the fine-ass farm girls to custom bikes, Metal Farm Magazine is jam-packed from cover to cover. Issue number one of this limited edition photo magazine is hand-numbered and features a special section about the reinstatement of Hank Williams Sr. campaign. So head on over to MetalFarm.com and order your copy today. Get them while they're hot, y'all. This magazine is about to plow under the imitators. Yes, Randy and our friends from Metal Farm Magazine. Definitely go to www.metalfarm.com and go ahead and get your pre-order in for their first issue of that magazine. It's going to be killer, and we thank those guys a lot for letting us be a part of their magazine. The last song that we played after the interview was Old Webb's Bullhorn Pontiac by the Jim Palace Gestures. And of course, again, we have to apologize for Dave for cutting it short on the second part of the interview. I really wanted to talk more about the Three Blue Teardrops and their newest album, Rust Belt Trio. I mean, they're a good band, and it was an honor to have them here. So definitely, if you like the rockabilly sound, check out Three Blue Teardrops as well. I want to give everybody the contact information, as usual, in case you don't already know. But the email address is blake@ibwip.com. Send us an email. Tell us who you want to hear on the show, who you want to see as a guest on the show. Tell us if you like the show, if you think it sucks ass. And we'll definitely respond to you. You can also use that email address for the trivia question. Hint, hint, hint. Anyway, the dial-in number is 206-339-8419. You can leave us a voicemail. And like I said earlier in our last episode, our anniversary show is coming up in May. We're going to have Wayne Gottstein from the Split Lip Rayfield, and we're super excited about that, and that's going to be our one-year anniversary show. So go ahead and call that dial-in number, 206-339-8419. Leave us a voicemail, birthday shout-out or something, so we can have tons of them to play on the next show in May. Once again, it's time for the It Burns When I Pee trivia question. Yes, on this episode, you will receive the newest Gin Palace Jester album called Roadhouse Riot and other songs with words. You'll also get their first album, Honky Tonk Fools. And along with that, as a bonus, you'll get the new Three Blue Teardrops CD, Rust Belt Trio. That's three CDs you get, and all you have to do is answer the simple question and be the first one to email us at blake@ibwip.com. Let's say you listen to this maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 days after the show is released. If you know the answer, you still need to email us, because sometimes we don't have anybody respond to us, then I get to keep the stuff. So if you don't want me to keep these three CDs, then you need to email us at blake@ibwip.com. Where did Dave Sisson see Johnny Cash for the first time? Where did Dave Sisson see Johnny Cash for the first time? If you know the answer, email us at blake@ibwip.com, and you will receive all three of these CDs. Awesome. On what other podcast do you win stuff? Anyway, I want to remind everybody also that you can check us out at our MySpace. It's myspace.com/itburnswhenip86. And now, announcing... I know, again, cheap sound effects. Anyway, the launch of It Burns When IP's very own website is www.ibwip.com. Go check us out for links. We have a store up there that's getting built. We have tons of photos. It's a great little place, and I want to thank Andy again from section86.com for getting our website all squared away. So check us out over there at ibwip.com, and I hope you enjoy it, and let us know what you think. So enough of me rambling on, because I know it's the most boring part of the fucking show. But let's get into another song by The Devil's Own. Now, this song is called Because of Catherine, and when they sent me the CD, I was listening to it, and this song just kind of stuck in my head, and it's just the story of the song, I think, that just really gets to me. So, The Devil's Own, it's a little bit softer song of theirs, but let's kick it off with Because of Catherine. Again, The Devil's Own, you can check them out at thedevilzonemusic.com. Here is Because of Catherine.
Hey, y'all. This is Pissed Offerson from The Devil's Own, and you're listening to the hottest podcast on the whole wide interweb. It burns when I pee. Hot.
I was hurt when I told you that I felt sick, and you just smiled and said I was hoping you'd say that. Rifling through my secrets. Ooh. And when I got the pictures back of the funeral, I just blackened out your eyes and pretended that you were not there. Smiled and said, I was hoping you'd say that.
Ooh. Want all your country, Americana, and roots music news? Then head on over to twangnation.com. I did, and now my penis is three times as big. TwangNation.com has videos, music reviews, and blogs to keep you up on all that is important in real country music. The site is so effective that my wife now finds me 2.3% more attractive. Go to TwangNation.com and tell them that It Burns When I Pee sent you. TwangNation.com, because real country music shouldn't suck.
That last song you heard was The Misery Jackals and their song, Keep It In Your Pants. You know, my mom always used to say that to me, keep it in your pants. Maybe that's why I have a podcast called It Burns When I Pee. Anyway, you can check out The Misery Jackals at myspace.com/TheMiseryJackals. Thanks to those guys for shipping us that song. I told them I needed it by the end of March. Slid it right in there on the last day. So thanks again to those guys. Now I got a little special voicemail for you. It's from a stranger, and I don't know who it is. I honestly don't. But like I said, we play all voicemails on the show. So here is the stranger voicemail.
It burns when I pee. Oh, God. Somebody help me.
That about wraps it up for me, folks. Just want to remind everyone to vote for It Burns When I Pee at PodcastAlley.com. It would mean a lot to us if you just go over to PodcastAlley.com and vote for It Burns When I Pee. Help us make the world know that there is real country music out there, and the only way to check it out is if they download It Burns When I Pee. Thanks again, everybody. We got Cheyenne coming up, and then we got one more song. It's been a pleasure, and remember, in May, we're going to have our big one-year anniversary show. We're looking forward to it, and we're looking forward to having Wayne Gottstein with us from Split Lip Rayfield. So, Cheyenne, take it away. See y'all later, and thanks again for supporting It Burns When I Pee. Get your hank on, bitches!
Well, friends, it's time once again to pack up the pickup and head out of Dodge. Special thanks to Dave Sisson for taking the trip down to Get Your Hank On Studios. We want to remind everyone to call our dial-in number, 206-339-8419, and give us a shout-out so we can play it on the anniversary show. Please have your voicemails to us by May 1st. On episode 15, our special guest will be Wayne Gottstein from Split Lip Rayfield. I can't believe it's been almost a year since I've been doing this show, and Blake still hasn't paid me a damn dime. I got some chicken to fry, so let's play one more song and get going. Here is Carmen Lee and her song, When You're Gone. Take care, and we'll see y'all next month.
When you're gone, here come my bad dreams. your gone time goes dragging on. When you're gone, when you're gone, when you're gone. When you're gone, I start in to worry. When you're gone, I start in to cry. When you're gone, that's when my blues come on. When you're gone, when you're gone, when you're gone. Don't you know how much I need you? You're the one for me. Don't you know I have to see you are a man. When you're gone, I lay with the light on. When you're gone, I don't sleep too well. When you're gone, I sing a sad, sad song. When you're gone.